Well, I recently met a bloke from England who loves travelling the world. He's a constant traveller. He's been to 116 countries. He's very, very adventurous. He's done a little bit of skydiving, bungee jumping, kayaking, all sorts of things that he does. And he loves being on the road. There's one uncommon thing about Tony Giles, and that is that he is blind, but he still manages to work his way around the world. And at the moment, he's working his way around Australia with the lovely Tatiana, his partner. So I've been trying to catch up with Tony ever since he left Perth, and I finally got him. He's in Canberra. Tony, hello. Welcome back. I hope your travels have been fun so far.
It's going well, Steve, yes. After we left you in Perth, we've been at Adelaide for 3 days, experienced the wild and wet, windy weather, and then on to Melbourne, where we met up with some friends and did a bit of wandering. That's Tatiana
yeah,
in the background.
Yeah, Tatiana's got to join in as well.
Yeah, to join in on our interview.
Yep.
As ladies like to do.
Oh, and naturally.
Now we've just arrived in Canberra. We're actually in a little town called Casey, about 13 kilometres outside Canberra.
Yeah, well, Casey's one of the older suburbs of Canberra, I think. Canberra's a really pretty little place. It's all circular there, so you get a bit confused because
you get dizzy.
You do. That's right.
I try not to fall in the lake.
No, don't fall in the lake. Lake Burley Griffin, that was purpose-built for Canberra. It's actually part of the Molonglo River, you'll be pleased to know.
Great.
But there's a lot of things to do in Canberra, but you probably won't want to go and see blue poles because I don't know that you can actually feel it to see what it's like.
Okay.
There's some great stuff to do in Canberra. You should enjoy it.
Hit the War Memorial and do a tour around the Parliament.
I used to work in Parliament House, believe it or not, many, many, many years ago. And it's a.
Were you a janitor?
No, I was working for a federal politician at one stage. After I worked for her, she never got re-elected, so I don't know if I was a problem. So, Tony, now you've been on the road. How long have you been on the road for this time?
We left the UK on the 25th, I think.
Yep.
And it took us about 26 hours to get to Oz.
Yeah.
And then we had a week in Perth and then 3 nights in Adelaide and we did some wine tasting. We've got an animal that's just joined us.
Hang on, good.
Steve. I'm being attacked. Bye.
What sort of animal is it? It's not a kangaroo or an emu, is it?
Four-legged. Got a long, bushy tail. I think it's a dog. How quickly do possums move? I don't think it's a possum.
Nah, it could be a Tasmanian devil.
Right.
Well, there you go. Well, it's nice to know that at least someone likes you, Tony.
Yeah. I guess that's our lunch. But it could be a small wombat, thinking about it.
It could be. I can tell you what, there's no such thing as a small wombat. They're great big fat things. They're wonderful. So, anyway, you're in Australia at the moment being attacked by a dog. Which is another one of your adventures that you've had. You've had a lot of adventures, though, haven't you? Not just in Australia, but everywhere.
Dingo.
So you've spent a lot of time travelling and you've had a lot of adventures.
Yeah, about 3 weeks in Oz. I think we've had 3 weeks.
Yeah,
now.
And prior to that, because you sort of go home to England, don't you? And you must recuperate and then you head off again, don't you?
Yes.
With this travelling, you've been doing it for quite a number of years, haven't you? You first started when you were at school, I think.
Right? just after school. I went to the States when I was 16 with the school and then started backpacking around the UK with a friend with sight in one eye when I'm sort of 17, 18, going to rock concerts and camping and hosteling and stuff. And then we went to the States and did the same thing. And then I studied there in 2000 for 4 months in South Carolina. That was sort of my first overseas trip by myself.
Yeah.
I sort of let loose in someone else's country and just created havoc and chaos, really, mayhem. So that was quite entertaining. All my friends went down to Florida to see Mickey Mouse for spring break, and I thought, oh, they're not going to let me drink and stuff. So I got to New Orleans by myself and sort of got staff to help me organize the flight and the hostel and then took a taxi to the hostel and got directions to Bourbon Street, sort of main street in New Orleans, and the blues and the jazz. And I walked outside this hostel, I got directions, and I just froze. I'm in a big city I've never been to. I'm totally blind, I'm partially deaf, what do I do? And I sort of took a few deep breaths, I thought, this is either what you want to do or you go home. A few more deep breaths, turned left and got on with it.
And you enjoyed New Orleans?
Oh, great, fantastic time, yeah. Live jazz, blues every night, big brass jazz band, Cajun food.
Well, I was going to ask you about the Cajun food. Because you're blind, your other senses are probably better than most people's. And yeah. I know from experience your sense of smell. If you walk from, like, if you walk anywhere near a coffee shop, you can know it's there. So what did you think of the Cajun food? I mean, genuine Cajun
delicious.
Food.
Yeah, yeah, very spicy and smell the onions cooking. Yeah. And you walk down the street, it's sort of, you know, 12:30 lunchtime, and you smell a bit of alligator cooking on the grill or whatever, and gumbo. I tried gumbo; it was very spicy. Delicious food, and then bars as well. You smell the alcohol and cafes and other things. Yeah, it was really real mix of ambience.
I know you love your music, and of course, Louisiana, that's the home of Zydeco. Fantastic. That's real good dance music. Usually features a piano accordion and a guy playing a washboard. That's really
a bit like Fats Domino or stuff like that. Or
Fats Domino is not Zydeco, but very, very danceable music.
Like skiffle.
Yeah, a bit like skiffle. Yeah, a bit like the old skiffle bands of the 1950s, England. Yeah. So from there, you sort of expanded. So was New Orleans, because that was when you first really went out on your own, I guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I exposed myself to, sort of everything, really. You know, what happened. So, you know, I sort of find out whether I liked it or didn't. You know.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, I did, and never sort of really looked back, as they say. You know, ended up in California and Hawaii and then broadened my horizon. Went off to Oz.
Yep.
Age of 22 and drank and partied for 5 months in Australia and New Zealand. And
I didn't know you could get drinks in Australia. That's news to me.
Yeah, the water's delicious.
Yeah. All those countries you've been to have been English-speaking countries so far. When did you first venture to a country that didn't have English as its first language?
Well, apart from a sort of a little side trip, a week in Belgium and a week in Holland, my first sort of real country was Thailand and Vietnam. They were the first two non-English-speaking, non-European-speaking countries. So that was a real challenge. Obviously, you can find people in Bangkok that speak a fair amount of English, but in Vietnam, it was very little.
Yeah.
We're talking 2001, 2002. Yeah. The country was just beginning to open up to tourism. There's no real infrastructure, sort of hotels, guest houses. There were no hostels then, as there are now.
Yeah.
No real backpacking network back then. So, yeah, it was all a bit of a mystery and a bit of sort of find as you go, really. My mum managed to find a guest house online, and, you know, the guys emailed back and he said, oh, yeah, I'll meet you at the airport. And he sent a taxi bike, but we missed each other.
Right.
So, normally when you're disabled and you go to an airport, you book your assistance with the air company.
Yeah.
And they sort of meet you off the plane and guide you through the customs and then out to the taxi rank. Well, this guy didn't speak much English. He took me through to the immigration and signed the documents and my visa, and he just left me to it.
Oh, right.
This is different. Luckily, because I'd flown from Australia to Vietnam, to Ho Chi Minh City in the south. But this Vietnamese girl, she lived in Australia, was coming through. So, I'll help you. But she had a taxi, so found my place, and the owner spoke some English, and I took motorbike taxis everywhere for a dollar. He told the guy where I wanted to go, so that was sort of the safest way to do it, really. And then I had a few mishaps in Vietnam, but I did some tours. I went to the Ko Chi tunnels and I experienced crawling around them. And
now, for you, that would have been a surreal experience.
Yeah, hands-on.
Exactly, and they're very, very small and crawling through, so you would have...
Tiny.
They're pretty dark anyway, so that wouldn't have worried you, that aspect, would
it? No.
The difference, like, the Vietnam and Thailand, they're quite close to each other. They're sort of similar cultures, and apart from the language, can you determine the difference between sort of similar countries like that?
I think so, yeah, a little bit. Obviously, the people are different. Thailand is much more touristic and, you know, it was then, it is now. The infrastructures are very similar, well, lack of, but the smells are different. You know, when you're in Ho Chi Minh City or Saigon, as everyone calls it, it stinks. The smell of the perfume rivers everywhere. Yeah. And there's rubbish everywhere. I mean, Bangkok's still probably the most amazing city I've ever experienced, but just it attacks your senses. And
it
that
does,
drive from the airport to the center, like 2 hours, and it's fumes, it's chaos, it's tuk-tuks, it's open sewers and pollution.
Clongs.
But there isn't rubbish like there was in Vietnam. That was a major difference. And also the sort of the different in sort of accent or pitch. That was also different.
You know, it's amazing because I've been to both. I reckon they must have cleaned up their act in Vietnam because, to my mind, there's a lot more greenery. There's a lot more parks. There's street trees. And I didn't see any rubbish. Whereas when I've been to Thailand and especially Bangkok, if you walk along the Klongs, it absolutely stinks.
So
they may have cleaned up Ho Chi Minh since you were you've been there.
When were you there?
I was there last year.
Okay, well, yeah, so that's... Yeah. And the other difference is, of course, what I found in Vietnam and in Thailand, obviously just the two big cities, but the one thing I noticed in, and it may be in Bangkok, but I just didn't notice it as much, was bicycles everywhere in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
That was a difference I noticed from Bangkok.
Yeah, Bangkok, there's a lot of traffic.
Yeah,
and really, a lot of tuk-tuks, but it's more of a standstill. Whereas in Ho Chi Minh, the traffic seems to move. And also, crossing the road in Ho Chi Minh is interesting because all you got to do is walk reasonably slowly across the road and the traffic avoids you. You just keep going.
That's right, it's got a slow suicide.
Whereas in Bangkok, you don't know where the traffic's coming from. They're chaotic.
No, nightmare. And open syringes, bridges that were half broken. We went to do one of those. I met this Dutch guy, we went to walk around the city together, and we went to a couple of temples, and I felt a reclining Buddha, and then we went on the boat ride on the river. Apparently, he said, "Oh, you have to jump on the boat." I thought, "All right, that's going to be fun."
Yeah.
But luckily, we managed to get the boat to stop long enough for me to get in. We shot off down river.
Yeah. Was that in Bangkok, was it, or was that...
I was in Bangkok, I only went to Bangkok, and then I went to the river on the River Kwai.
Yeah, the River Kwai is interesting.
Yeah. Now, interesting for your listeners, it's one of the few places I've been to. It's amazing. Let's say Thailand's a second world country, third world country, not much infrastructure for people, so let alone disabled people. Yeah. And we did this tour. We went out to one of the camps, the memorials, and we come out. This I was talking to one of the tour girls, and we've been around looking at the graves, and she was saying, "Oh, how young they are, New Zealanders and England."
Yeah.
And then she said, "Oh, look at this, Tony. Just outside this memorial was this big tactile map, 3D model of the whole river encampment.
Really?
Unbelievable. Yeah, braille on it, marking the camps where they were." And the cemeteries, I couldn't believe it.
Amazing. It was amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
You've done all of South America. Yeah, that's a fantastic continent. Really interesting place. Did you have any favourite parts of South America?
I liked Venezuela for its people. Even though they don't speak much English, and I speak practically no Spanish, it just felt, and very poor people, very poor, but it's just an empathy. I remember I was sat in a bus station once waiting for a bus, which I knew it was going to be late because it always is. And I was sat on this little plastic stool next to this store. And I was about, I don't know, maybe a dozen, 15 people came up to me and asked me if I was okay in Spanish. And a couple of ladies just sort of stroked my arm and said, "Sí, sí." It's just wonderful. To meet strangers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was lovely. And probably one of the best things I did in South America in my three, four visits to there was hiking to Angel Falls.
Yes, because that's very remote, Angel Falls, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You fly in to the national park, and then you basically canoe up river for a day and a half, and then you hike through the forest, cross a river, hike through the forest up to the falls, and then climb up the rocks and look at the falls. Hear it, in my case.
Yeah.
So it was not so much the actual falls at the end, because you're still quite far away, but it was more the hike getting there. The actual sort of mission getting there was amazing.
And how do you go on a hike like that? Because you've got your stick with you.
I got my stick.
You're going through the jungle, I guess.
Nah, I take a guide. I get my own guide. So I pay a bit extra for a personal guide. And then we just link arms and then step out. He tells me the steps. And I went up, walked up with using my stick and leaning on his arm. And then actually came down on my bum a lot of it because it's just easier. Right. Ruined a pair of trousers, but that's all right. I get picked. People ask me, how do you see the world? How do you... and I get a picture through a 3D picture.
Yeah.
And I'm walking on leaves and branches and feeling the different gradients, the different texture of soil and stuff like that. That's how I sort of see what I'm hiking.
Did you go to places like Machu Picchu while you were there?
No, I've not been there, but I've been to Iguazu Waterfall on the Argentine-Brazil border.
That'd be fairly spectacular from your point of view because of the noise.
The noise,
and the amount of spray and stuff that.
Yeah, you walk up these metal ramps and you get a bridge right over the falls and all the spray and the gantry's moving with all the people. But the noise is stupendous. And then I took a speedboat right into the falls and had a shower.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I did, special thing I did in South America was in southern Argentina, was in Patagonia, was Moreno Glacier.
Near
El Calafate.
I think that's one of the only glaciers in the world that's still growing. A lot of them are receding.
That's right, and it's cracking. And
yeah.
It's falling off like gunfire.
From your perspective, you don't know where it's going to break, do you?
No.
You can't see anything.
No.
Must have been very, very cold and challenging to do that, was it?
I guess so, but it was fun. I like Brazil, I like the food in Brazil.
Yeah.
And the people, the partying. In Salvador, sort of constant partying all the time.
I've heard that some of those coastal cities, Salvador, Recife, places like that, are pretty good.
Yeah, traffic in Recife is crazy.
Is it?
Porto Seguro. And I actually went to a little place called Natal. I actually went to Sand Dune.
Oh, yeah.
Buggy. Yeah, racing down the sand dunes, that was great fun. I love all that. I love everything you can feel, like bungee jumping, skydiving. It's because it's just the feel, it's the bounces and the unknowns and the adrenaline rush. I love it.
When you do a bungee jump, for instance, as soon as you've bounced back up, you think, oh, that's it, this the ride, this is over.
Yeah, and then the next one comes along.
Yeah.
I've done 16 so far.
16 bungee jumps. Yeah.
16 bungee, skydive 3 times. And
yeah.
A lot of sighted people say they wouldn't do a bungee. The idea of throwing him off a structure is just a bit strange, but I think bungee jumping is better than skydiving, personally.
Do you?
Yeah, because every time I skydive, I have to have someone with me.
Yeah, you're strapped. Yeah, strapped to someone.
Because otherwise I wouldn't know where the ground was coming up.
And with the skydiving, is it the big thrill of just for you of just falling through the sky, or because a lot of people say, when the chute opens, the ride's it's sort of over. But do you feel that at all, or do you enjoy all the elements?
Yeah, I prefer the free falling.
Yeah,
that's like I described it in my first book, like surfing on air instead of surfing on water. But then the guy pulls the parachute harness, and that really kills. Like the harness digs into your legs.
Is it the legs? I thought it'd dig into the shoulders, but digs into the legs, does it?
Yeah, it digs into your legs. It's sort of. Well, your groin area, really. That's not great.
That wouldn't be pleasant. Nah. It must be pulling a few Gs when that chute opens.
Yeah, quite a few, especially with my weight.
Your weight's nowhere near my weight, I can tell you that right
now. Well, that's true, yeah.
Now, this trip, Australia, New Zealand, is that it, or you go back home after that?
Australia, New Zealand, and then what the main island of Cook Islands.
Rarotonga, yeah.
Just the one.
And then you head home and you'll get itchy feet, I guess, and start planning another one, will you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, go home, type up notes, write a blog, and then on to the next one, which could be Africa next year now.
West Coast Africa?
I won't do any more travelling this year.
A lot of time I have to get back, I guess, before
Christmas. Well, there's still the beginning of December. I could, go away for a couple of weeks, but not this time.
Yeah.
Concentrate on finishing off another book if I can. I just published my second book.
Now, I'm going to get the details of those books because the best way to get them is to go to your website, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. TonyTheTraveller.com.
And you've got two books out now, haven't you?
That's right. My first one was published in 2010 called Seeing the World My Way, and it was about why a blind guy wanted to go and see the world, sort of about how I started and my crazy drinking. And then my second book I published about 2 or 3 weeks ago is called Seeing the Americas My Way. It's a trip I did in 2004 where I started in Brazil and I sort of finished in Alaska. But I do most of sort of the southern part of South America, Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and then went my way up through the States, Canada, Mexico, Cuba. It's a more of a sort of sober reflection of the way I travel and people I meet and more emotional sort of journey.
But then as you get older, your perspective changes as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, the people you meet, the things you do, yeah, everything changes.
Because I know you were telling me stories about when you were a lot younger and you were a bit of a lad, really, weren't you? You got into a bit of trouble with drinking and stuff like that.
Okay, occasionally, yeah.
Oh, I'm not criticising you. Trust me.
Once a night, at least.
But now you don't drink?
No, I've been sober since 2002, end of 2002. So I had a kidney transplant in 2008.
That's right.
Why I needed to stop. So yeah, I watch others get drunk and then laugh at them, and then it's all good. All good fun.
Yeah, it must be good being an observer these days rather than a participant.
Yeah. And I said, oh my God, that's what I would like. So it's all part of travelling and it's all part of growing up.
For you, is it the people that you meet or the places that you visit or a combination of all of the above?
Yeah, I think a combination of things. For me, it's the ultimate reason I keep going travelling is, apart from a new country and a new food, new people to meet, is the challenge. The challenge you're getting from A to B in a foreign country, particularly African countries and Asian countries, South America, where it's not westernized, it's not structured, it's off the beaten track. That's the real challenge for me now.
Yeah.
And meeting the local people. I mean, I prefer to couch surf these days rather than staying in hostels. So I want to stay with local people, eat local food, learn about their country through their customs. You know, that's the challenge. But it's about people, of course it is. Without people, there'd be nothing.
And really, you can go and see the world as much as you like, but most of the places you're going to, people have been there before you. And it's the human influence on all these places as well, isn't it?
Of course it is. Yeah, a combination of the human influence and the natural influences. Yeah. How they interact.
Well, Tony, it was a pleasure to meet you and Tatiana.
Thank you very much.
You're a lovely couple. And just my experience of going through airport security with you taught me a little bit about how much more difficult it is for you to travel than it is, say, for me to travel. Because having sight, and my daughter is hearing impaired, but she's still got the sight, so she can still see the signs and stuff like that. But just being with you and Tatiana just reminded me of how much more different it is for you. But then when I thought about it, it's normal for you, isn't it?
It's normal. It's what I do every time. And also for us, as a foreigner, when you're going into an airport for the first time, especially the first time, it's chaos.
Yeah.
If you go somewhere, maybe not Perth so much, but somewhere like Sydney or LA, New York, London. People rushing around, lots of noise, stuff, lights. It must be absolutely terrifying to see that. And when you're blind, you hear that.
Yeah.
But it's a bit more of a delay than when you actually see that. And of course, like I say, getting assistance, you bypass a lot of security and stuff.
Yeah.
That's good fun.
Tony Giles. His website is
TonyTheTraveller.com.
You can buy his books through there. You got to keep watching your website because you're getting all these new books out, aren't you? So when
keep busy, keep watching.
I know you publish online. Any plans to get them sort of a publisher involved and to bring out hardback version?
Not really. I had a publisher with the first one. He booked the second one, so published. So we'll see how they go, and then see if there's any further interest. I'm working on one about a trip I did to Southern Africa. So.
Tony Giles, a bloke who's a constant traveller, who, despite the fact that he's blind, will just get out there and get the travelling bug and just go for it. Very, very admirable, Tony. It's been wonderful to meet you and Tatiana.
Thank you very much.
Probably a little bit nicer meeting Tatiana, but you'd expect that.
Yes.
And congratulations with your continuing travels, and you've got to keep me informed about what you're doing from now on.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Tony.